Sounds was recorded on the 20th of February, 1962. Medium Leslie Flint. That's recording.
So quiet, isn't it? I can't hear your recorder.
No, it doesn't make any noise.
That's wonderful. I wonder if the American astronaut will go up today.
Yes, I wonder. Especially they talk so much about it.
Oh, it is, isn't it?
And much better to do it and then say afterwards we've done it.
Oh, dear. It's really rather laughable, isn't it, in a way? Hello, Mickey.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. We're all very punctual today, aren't we?
Are you early?
Yes.
Oh.
I hope you don't mind.
No, it makes a lot to me. I mean, I'm very pleased to see you whenever you come.
Thank you very much.
Your husband's here.
Good.
He knew he was coming this morning.
Yes, how nice. He never disappoints me, does he?
No.
Hello, darling.
I never disappoint you.
No, you don't.
It would have to be something far beyond my control for me not to come and talk to you. Of course, there are occasions when, of course, it is difficult. Obviously.
Yes.
One cannot always manage to do as well as one would wish. I suppose, really, one always feels one might have done a little better, but I do the best I can under the circumstances.
You do wonderfully, darling. What were you doing when you were called away?
Well, actually, I wasn't doing anything.
Oh!
So, you haven't disturbed anything or in any way interfered with anything that I might have been interested in at that particular time. As a matter of fact, I always know when it's time to come and to talk to you. And as I say, I say so often to you, time in a sense means little or nothing to us. And I can always arrange everything accordingly. I mean, I knew I was coming to talk to you today, so I deliberately made opportunity to rest and prepare for it.
Oh, how very nice.
I always go over everything I'm going to say to you. At least, when I say I go over everything, I plan what I'm going to say to you. Whether I always succeed is a different matter. But I endeavour to go over as much ground as possible and say as much as I can. But, of course, there's always a problem of finding words to depict and describe things appertaining to our life. It's always a problem there, too.
Yes, and yet you see, it all sounds very spontaneous because you say I may ask you questions, so it doesn't really seem as though it were planned.
Oh, no, it's planned to a point, you see. I mean, I have certain things that I consider a thing that I'll say to you, Of course, I don't necessarily know what questions you're going to ask me. Occasionally I do, but I have a sort of gist in my own mind of what I'm going to say. You know, I do plan. There is some form of plan, as you know.
Yes, there are, yes. Well, it's very interesting.
It may appear spontaneous, and in a sense at times it is spontaneous, but a lot of it I've already sort of prepared beforehand as to what I'm going to say.
Really? In your mind or on paper?
Not on paper as such, no, in my mind.
Yes. Yes, that's very interesting.
I sort of try to deliberate and think, now, would this be a sort of suitable thing to mention, or is it possible to mention this so that it could be understood?
Yes.
I'm always coming up against a problem that there are certain facts of life here that one just can't find ways of expressing.
Yes, I quite understand that.
I always
that.
Have to bring it down to some sort of material level.
Yes, of course. Well, I've been reading recently that nobody really understands how direct voice is produced. I wonder if you could tell me a little of the technique of this form of communication.
Well, I don't think that anyone can really explain it, not in a technical sense, not in a scientific sense.
No.
The only way one can sort of hope to give an impression of it is the fact that the whole of the atmosphere is vibrational. Everything that exists, everything that has any being at all, even inanimate objects, quite apart from human beings and animals and so on, and nature itself, everything has a form of life.
Yes.
And this is vitality. Vitality is a word which perhaps doesn't depict quite what I want to convey, but there is this life, this vitality, this something that is in itself dynamic and powerful, which means that it can be utilized. It's never lost. Certain things may appear to be lost, but they're not really lost. I mean, a sound that's vibrated on the atmosphere may be heard for a fleeting second by the ears of a human being, but it doesn't mean to say that immediately it is lost, that it's gone. It's still vibrating, probably on another vibration quite apart from that which you've heard it. And of course there are many sounds which you do not hear, which are far beyond the human range.
Yes.
And all these vibrations are very real things. And we are able to utilize a certain substance too, which emanates from nature, emanates from human beings also, of course, which you've termed, or which has been termed ectoplasm, which in itself is something which we can utilize, which becomes solidified to a point. It's always fluctuating. It's never stationary for any length of time. It's true. But it can be utilized by certain people here who know how to use it, to build or form a replica of the vocal organs necessary for speech, and in some instances in such things as materialization, whole figures and forms,
yes,
or replicas of bodies. These are, and must always be considered, artificial.
Yes.
Because they are artificially produced. And that is why I think quite often people say, oh, well, so-and-so said so-and-so, which is very interesting and which was very typical of that person, and but the voice itself doesn't sound the same. But then again, the voice is artificially produced. It's not natural. It's not our voice in a sense. It's vibrational.
Yes.
But it's not vibrational in the same sense as when one was on earth utilizing one's own vocal organs in one's own natural conditions. Everything that we are doing, I mean, I'm talking to you in a sense, is artificial. It's reproduction, it's artificially reproduced. And although that which I want to convey to you is factual, is my own thinking, is from my own experience, that which reproduces it is in a sense, artificial, if you can follow what I mean.
Yes, but your whole personality and your voice and everything came through last time and is now.
Well, you see, then, of course, when that happens, one naturally is very, very happy about it, very pleased. But the point is that it's only possible I would say it is only possible with people who've had a lot of experience, a lot of opportunity. In other words, you sort of are able to assert, I suppose is the word, assert your own personality to such an extent that what is artificially produced is so naturally reproduced, in a sense. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that I'm not so conscious of the artificial aids or the artificial conditions in which I have to work to transmit myself. In other words, my personality comes out naturally, or more naturally, and it's possibly recognizable, because I have lost, as it were, the nervousness that I would have had in the beginning, the uncertainty, the fumbling. I'm more concerned, I'm more able, more assured, and I'm not so concerned with all the complexities of it. In other words, I've mastered it to a certain extent, you see, and in consequence it comes to you more naturally, because I am more natural in my endeavours to make the contact.
Yes, and you concentrate your thought into the ectoplasm.
Yes, well, the whole point is that the more natural the communicator, that is, the more at ease the communicator is, the more familiar the communicator is with the method of communication, the more assured they are in the manipulation of the substance and the condition, then obviously the more at ease, the more natural the result is going to be.
Yes.
And it's merely the concentration and the power of one's thought which makes or mars the success of communication. There are some people who come who fumble and are nervous and overwrought, over-anxious, terribly moved, terribly sort of concerned and emotional, and in consequence these varying factors all defeat their end, you see.
Yes, I
can
see that.
One has to be cool, calm, collected, dispassionate, assured, know what you're doing, and as I've said before, have some plan. That's why I invariably have some sort of plan as to what I'm going to say, because it does help. Because if, for instance, sometimes a person may ask a question of us, you see, which may take us completely unawares, and we may be so, for the time being, for the moment, so bemused and not be quite sure what the answer is to that question, even though one may know it in one's own vibration, in one's own condition. We are still, of course, working in an artificial condition when we're communicating, and it's like trying to recollect something.
Yes.
In a condition to which you're not familiar, and you have to release that condition and go back onto your natural own condition to recapture the thought and the memory of something that you've been asked to reply to.
Yes.
Then you've got to get back again and try and get the answer through. That is why I think so many people are inclined to be disappointed at first when they sit with a medium, because they have so often preconceived ideas as to what the communicator should be able to tell them and answer certain questions perhaps they've already prepared to ask. And in consequence, they don't necessarily get the correct answers, or if they get an answer at all. And it raises doubts, often in the minds of the recipient of the message. And the whole point is that one must realize that this is something which can seldom be done on the spur of the moment, which often requires great tact and patience on both sides, the communicator and the recipient of the messages. When a person goes to a seance, they should have no too strong a preconceived ideas to what they should get. Because in any case, assuming that one were always to get the kind of answer to the question that you ask, I wouldn't suggest that that is tremendously evidential. It may seem so at the moment and may give one a tremendous sort of thrill, but the point is that often the least expected, the unexpected, is often far more reliable, far more evidential than that which you anticipate, which is already in your mind, and which you could say, or you could say to yourself, or other people would say to you afterwards, oh, well, of course, you sat there thinking about so-and-so, they just read your mind.
Oh, yes.
It was telepathy.
Yes.
So often you'll find that communicators from our side deliberately avoid the obvious, to rule out telepathy. That's often why you will find that people on this side will deliberately give certain information or pass certain remarks about certain things, which at the time to the recipient mean nothing, and often sound silly perhaps, but afterwards checking up and perhaps going to a lot of trouble to find out, you find that it was true.
Yes,
that
yes.
Therefore rules out telepathy,
yes.
And proves much more surely, certainly, the communicator's bona fide.
Yes, I see that, darling. Now, could we be frivolous and talk about spirit attire? For instance, I used to think you went about, you know, in long flowing robes. And as a matter of fact, I still read that you do, and wear sashes and girdles round your waist, and richly embroidered cloaks, and all sorts of exciting things.
Well, I think when we come to the point of clothes, I think that it's so varied. And of course, it depends upon the individual. If an individual feels that it is for them pleasant, natural to dress in a type of robe, then they'll have that. But if they feel inclined, as in the case of some men, for instance, that they prefer to wear a suit, then they would wear a suit. I think the whole thing depends so much upon the individual and as to what degree of development or lack of it they may have. For instance,
yes.
A person first coming here would feel very probably embarrassed in a robe, and would never conceive of themselves being dressed in such an attire, and in consequence they would dress in a normal suit. That is often why spirits are described in meetings and places as wearing a dark pinstripe suit or whatever it happens to be.
Yes.
And it isn't necessarily always just for recognition or to help to recognize, it's because they naturally wear that.
Yes.
And of course the average person, one must remember this, that the average person who communicates has presumably only been over a very short time, maybe 2 or 3 years, perhaps 10 years, maybe a little longer, but time itself is nothing. And in consequence, a person who's only been here a short time, whether it's 10, 5, or perhaps 20 years or more, may not, during that period of time, advance very far. It's natural and human that the people on earth who do contact their loved ones, they naturally like to think that that person has advanced to a great height. But of course, it's very rare. After all, life here is so tremendous in its range that we are ever conscious of the fact that we haven't advanced very far. And I think, with a few exceptions, anyone who comes through and talks and says that they've advanced to a very high sphere, quite frankly, I don't think that they're speaking the truth. Because, with a few exceptions, they may be special souls who've been chosen to do a specific work, a special work for with some, perhaps, some particular medium or some particular individual who may not even be a medium for that matter, may not even be a spiritualist for that matter, because a lot of our work is done through people who are not instruments in the sense of being mediums as such, but are people who are sensitive and who have a great desire to do some work on earth of a spiritual nature, and in consequence they are helped from this side. You see, the whole subject, the whole thing itself, that is, the communication between our world and yours, and the possibilities, and what happens and transpires, how one goes about it. In fact, the whole thing is so tremendous that one cannot really give you a great deal. One can only give you so much. And I think that it's only natural that people who come back should quite necessarily, naturally dress in appearance as you would have known them on earth.
Yes, but on, say, the third and fourth sphere, generally speaking, I suppose people would wear something more interesting.
Well, I
think
we
must first... ordinary clothes are so very dull.
Yes, well, first we must clarify this business about spheres of first and second and third and fourth. For instance, one sphere, so we'll say the second sphere, if you like, is so vast that it may contain, and it does contain, many, many different aspects of life and development of life. And you may have in that one sphere every conceivable type of wearing apparel according to the particular individual, obviously, as to what they feel inclined to wear. There are many, of course, tremendous numbers, and I suppose one could say and should say that those who've advanced a little, at least, beyond the mundane thoughts and conditions of earth do dispose of the material conception of clothing,
yes,
and they begin to have an aesthetic, if you like, attitude of mind towards it, and in consequence they do wear robes such as the Grecians would have worn, or the Romans, And you do get vast majorities of people choosing this particular type of raiment.
Yes.
But I wouldn't like you to think that all do, because that wouldn't be true. Certainly on lower spheres, or spheres near the Earth, a lot of them do wear dress similar to they would have worn on Earth.
Yes. And then I suppose finally, I suppose clothes just don't exist, do they, at all?
I've never yet been in a sphere or condition of life where clothes did not exist as such. But I do feel that as one progresses, one's range, I suppose one could say, becomes much wider, and one's conception of things is so much more enlarged that one would and does change according to one's outlook, mood, what one is going to do, what one feels inclined to do, one's appearance. I mean, for instance, there are some people who sometimes would wear beautiful robes. Another time, perhaps they'd only just wear something around the waist. Another time, they'd wear something on their hair. Another time, they would not wear anything on their hair, and so on.
Yes.
Sometimes the hair would be done in one way, and sometimes in another. Then the whole point is that so much depends, as indeed it does on Earth, but in a more material sense, of course.
Yes.
Here everything is according to one's advancement spiritually, one's consciousness of things, one's awareness, one's susceptibility to conditions and vibrations even. If you're going somewhere very special, perhaps you would feel disposed to wear certain raiment that you felt was appropriate to that particular affair.
Yes, that's very nice, yes. And what colours would alter us?
Oh, colours, of course. Colours have a tremendous part to play in our existence. We have every conceivable colour that you can imagine,
yes.
And far many more besides you can't imagine. And some of the colourings are so fantastic, of course. But colour plays a very important part in our lives, and vibrational music, of course.
Yes, how lovely.
Music applies a great deal to us.
Yes. Yes, it must be very, very beautiful.
But you see, we keep coming up against this problem of how to describe something which
yes.
is so far removed from your world. All I can say is that we have every conceivable type of dress, every conceivable type of abode, of housing that you could imagine, enormous places, small places, of every age and type and architecture, according to the individuals. I mean, for instance, you may have someone who has a passion for the Roman or the Grecian architecture, and you will have whole areas of buildings of such nature. In fact, I think one can really say that here you will find replica of everything that has ever existed. That is, on its higher level.
Yes, yes, it is.
I mean, if you wanted to, we can. When you're here, if you wanted to see what ancient Rome was like at a certain period in history, you can see that, the same as you could see what Renaissance Italy was like at a certain period, say in Florence and so on.
Yes,
you see, nothing is lost.
Yes.
You see, the whole story and the development of mankind is, I wouldn't say written, but it's registered. Is that the only way I can probably explain it? It is registered. I don't mean to say that it still exists in the same material form, but it is there like a reflection, can I put it like that, in which you can see. For instance, if a person is tremendously interested, say, in ancient Egypt, and they would like to see pictures, or visions, if you like, or aspects of that life centuries ago, it can be seen, it can be visualized, it's registered in the atmosphere. It isn't actually living, in a sense, but it is there. It's like a reflection of the past.
Yes, how interesting.
Although those people connected with that era and age have gone on, obviously, into other spheres and developed vastly, the remembrance of things past is there, the consciousness of these things. And after all said and done, that is how we all express ourselves and develop accordingly. And we learn learn from our mistakes. We learn from our past. It is our past that deliberates to some extent our future. It creates the path which we're going to tread, and it is good to be able to see these things in retrospect, to be able to look back and to see them, but not just see them, as it were, in mind, but to see them visually.
Yes.
You see.
Yes,
and all these things
very
are very good, and also they are used. People use these, for instance, teachers and great souls who go to other spheres, use this power of being able to draw upon past experience and past conditions of life to explain and to teach and to help those who are struggling. You see, you don't just read out of a dull book. I mean, the book may be interesting, of course, and we do have books here, but the point is that there is that ability to be able to draw upon the past, to draw upon the reflection of things past.
Yes.
And see it in actual fact, as it were, to see it in almost as if you were looking at a moving picture screen, a cinema screen. You can see it all there, reproduced.
Very exciting.
This is only just one of the many vast things that one gradually learns and understands and appreciates and helps one so tremendously. There's nothing here that is ever really, you might say, dull or boring. I don't think I've ever experienced anything boring or dull since I've been here. It's always exciting, full of promise, it's always something new to experience, new contacts to make, new friends. Oh, it's so exciting. I feel such a loss to explain it.
I'm sure you do. Darling, may I ask if any of the other planets are inhabited and if they have their own spirit spheres?
Yes, but then again, there are other planets that are inhabited with a form of life very similar to your own.
Really?
In regard to the appearance of the individuals concerned. But of course some planets are not inhabited at all.
Yeah.
And of course many of these planets are far vaster than the world in which you live.
Yes.
And they are invariably much more highly developed souls.
Oh, there, yes. Of course, we're all going round the sun, revolving round the sun, and various distances from the sun, I suppose.
Yes.
But
the sun doesn't necessarily have the same effect on all those different spheres or planets.
No, I suppose not. But there will be other spirit spheres.
Oh, yes.
Rather than the Earth.
Oh, yes, the Earth is but one. There are many others.
Yes.
Man will begin to realize, I think, very much more soon than he's ever realized before. I think there's tremendous revelations to be discovered.
Yes.
Very soon, I think, man will have something really to think about which will, if anything was necessary to prove more fully this truth,
yes,
it definitely will, you know.
Oh, that's very, very interesting, darling.
I think the time will come, you know, when science itself will perfect some sort of an instrument. They won't develop it for this purpose. They won't anticipate it will be used for this purpose because they haven't even any interest in it. But they will discover that this instrument will make possible communication with our world. You know?
Yes, that will
they
be wonderful,
will be
won't
trying
it?
Trying to develop something for another purpose altogether, but they'll strike upon that, you know.
Yes.
Because after all, it is only tuning in onto a different vibration of a much higher rate.
Yes.
So far, of course, we found that we have to use instruments that is. Individuals, people.
Yes.
But I think the time will come when science will provide some sort of an instrument of a vibrational nature which will make communication a scientific fact.
Yes. That will upset a good number of our preconceived ideas.
Oh, it certainly will. It will have a very big effect on a lot of people.
Yes.
But it's got to come eventually. I think vast things are in store. I can see vast changes. I feel very sure that the coming years hold tremendous possibilities for man. Nothing will convince me that man is going to destroy himself.
No.
I think he may come to the brink, but he'll never go over it.
No, well, that's wonderful.
I have to go in a minute now.
Yes, thank you, darling.
I look forward so much to this. I shall look forward to coming again soon.
Next Tuesday, I think, in 1 week. Will be lovely.
Very nice.
Yes.
All my love and blessings.
Yes, thank you for coming, darling.
I'll come again as soon as possible.
Yes, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, dear.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Mickey.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Mickey.
You did very well this morning, didn't
you? Very well indeed, yes. I think he's a very wonderful communicator, don't you?
I think it's fantastic.